Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, some fun today in congressional hearing. Jim Jordan lost his mind. Ohio Representative Jordan demanding Anthony Fauci give him a date when we can be careless again. And it was funny, just to hear, when can we go back to church? Well, people are going to church. You just have to be somewhat sane and rational. You know when we can go back to normal or what we think was normal? Oh, when you start doing the right thing. Just a thought. And when you stop telling people it's all a hoax and it's all nonsense. Although, I got to be honest, he did admit that 560,000 people died because of it. He did admit to that. I guess it doesn't mean anything to him, but he did admit to it. Anyway, we're here to share some thoughts on the craziness in our Capitol. I've asked our good friend Bob Ney to come talk with us. Bob's a former Ohio congressman and political analyst extraordinaire. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks. And who knows more about craziness in the Capitol than me? I'm one of them. As John Boehner says, crazy town, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, I've been listening to a little bit of right-wing radio today in the last couple of days because I've been doing some driving. And, what I find hysterical is everything's Washington's fault, and they get to blame everything on Washington while then blaming all of the poor people around them. It's very right. Interesting.
I thought Democratic Chairman Clyburn handled it quite well, and he always does. I served with him in the Congress. You know, he's chair of the committee where Jim Jordan and Dr. Fauci went back and forth, and I just thought he handled it quite well as chair.
Yeah.
Very calm.
See, I don't think I could be that calm. I've said this before. People have gone, hey, you should run for Congress. You should run for something. And I'm going, I'm the last guy you want to see in that office because I would probably reach across the table and try and strangle somebody, which would not be good.
Well, yeah, but you know what? It'd probably be okay back home. They might vote for you again.
Well,
I'm telling you.
That's true. We'll see how that plays out. I wanted to get your thoughts on the Chauvin trial. Have you been following this at all as the defense rested?
I followed, some of it. Yes, and the defense, has rested in the trial. And I thought some of the, some key testimony, was when the one policeman came and talked about how, the length of the chokehold shouldn't have been, for that period of time, and the experts that they brought in. But both prosecution and defense have rested their cases, is what's happened. So, now Judge, I think it's Cahill, was the judge, told the members of the jury that they should return to court at 9 a.m. I think it's on would be on Monday. And, trial has now went its course. And they'll be prepared to hear the closing arguments
right.
Is what will happen then.
And then early, I guess Monday afternoon, they should get the case, and we'll see how long it would be to decide. And I got to be honest, I've watched as much of it as I can, and I watched more of the. Honestly, I've watched more of the defense's presentation because I want to see what they're.
Right.
I see from my eyes what happened. I want to see how they justify it. And bringing in that Fowler, as their expert, who
right.
basically said, no, the knee in the back didn't mean anything. He probably would have died anyway because he was a big guy with a big heart. And, he was sucking in gas fumes or whatever it was. And I'm going, I'm not buying that.
Right. And then they had the medical expert who, addressed the issues of the plaque, in the heart, et cetera, and the condition. But then said that, what caused the whole domino effect of the heart to operate that way was the knee on the neck.
Yep.
That was the medical expert. Now, Chauvin is charged with second-degree murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter in the death. Now, if he's convicted, and this is where I think it's going to be interesting to see if he's convicted of the most serious charge, he would face 10 and a half years to 15 years in prison, but he could receive a lesser term, depends on which charge, he's convicted of.
Yeah.
And whether he, serves concurrent or not time. So actually the sentencing, I think, is going to be the part that's probably, or could be, I should say, Rick, controversial.
My friend Curie would be very happy at your assumption that he's going to be found guilty.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why I am. I'm talking as if he will be, you know, found guilty. I don't know. Who knows what a jury does? I think he'll be found guilty. I think the question will be is the amount of time served, and that will become the issue, obviously, of the day and the issue that's going to stir a lot of emotion.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this goes. I wanted to get your thoughts on Russia. The president has has gone forward with some sanction ideas. Because evidently we now find out what we knew all along, that Paul Manafort gave Konstantin Kilimnik internal polling data from the Trump campaign. We knew that. I guess we've known that all along. That's now something that now they're putting a little foot down for cybersecurity and for election interference. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, there were some thoughts from former Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, who had dealt with Putin, you know, for quite a few years when he ran the oil company. And he used to say that, this is Tillerson, that sanctions did little, or if anything, to deter the Russian leader. And you really, that may be true in itself, but the U.S. and our allies have imposed some sanctions against Russia. Basically, I think every year for probably the last 7 years, and Russia has still continued to occupy the Crimea and eastern Ukraine. It still has supported Assad. It has still interfered with our elections. But these sanctions now by President Biden's administration will have some new standing, Rick. That's going to be in the cyber realm. So the U.S. government is formally accusing Russia's intel service, you know, the SolarWinds hack, the situation, and it's identified, you know, where it's going to go after it. So there are some sanctions that are going to be new. Now, one thing that we haven't been able to sanction, the Biden administration is going to have a tough time, and that's Nord Stream 2 is what it's called. And that's complicated because Germany's involved with that pipeline, and that is a toughie to go after. But the bottom line is, I think that the sanctions are a good thing to do. Will it totally change Putin's behavior? Yeah, probably not, but it still is most likely worth the effort that they're doing.
No, it's one of those things. I agree. It's not because we're not going to get into a shooting war. Nobody wants that.
Correct.
But it's saying, hey, we know.
Right. Exactly. And you know, it's like with Iran and sanctions. You know, we've sanctioned everything except the air that's breathed. And that's why we had the, you know, the nuclear accord under President Obama to actually, you know, step into the diplomatic realm. And I think we can look towards the diplomatic realm here, too, because the second path that the president is taking is he is asking that he and Putin have a direct, and you reported on this the other day, a direct summit. He could be criticized for that, but, you know, again, why not? President Biden wouldn't be going to the summit to give in, be going to the summit to at least communicate. So sanctions followed up by direct diplomatic communication.
Yeah,
I think it's a two-path.
Supposedly during the height of the Cold War, you know, we had the red bat phone in the White House.
Sure, absolutely.
So that you can't stop talking. You can disagree. You can be adversaries. You can go at each other, but you got to keep talking about it.
That's right. So it's a two-path for President Biden, and I think that it'll be, you know, interesting to see what happens. There may be some movement with Putin. We'll know.
Yeah, I'm curious, you know, how vulnerable do you think we are to their hacks? One of the things that I talked about some with our friend Sarah Kendzior earlier was that, you know, they don't know we don't really know how far in the Russian hackers got into our electric grids and into our the dams and, you know, our infrastructure, how deep they're in into our treasury. We don't know. How bad do you think it is?
I think it's pretty serious. There's two, at least in my opinion, and going back to the days I served in Congress, and at least the information I had then, I think is probably pretty accurate now, and that's that there's a couple of paths here too that the Russians take. One being the Russian government with, you know, trying to infiltrate at all levels. When we were in Congress, I was overseeing our, you know, security and technology section. We regularly received hack warnings, and I would get them in my office in the morning, and that Iran and China and Russia were the three, way back then, you know, in 2001, 2002, et cetera, were the ones that were trying to hack into our computers. We would send, actually, by the way, formal protests, and the Chinese would answer, they're teenagers, how they would answer it, you know, and the Russians just didn't answer. So, yes, it's been going on a long time. I think we're vulnerable. I think they may be in our systems more than we know. The second route that's being taken, too, is sort of by the Russian mafia, and that's the even separate of the Russian government, but it's coming out of Russia where they are, you know, going into the financial systems and actually, you know, hacking bank accounts, et cetera, at an alarming rate.
Yeah, they're the ones you're probably behind going, your social securities, under hack, call law enforcement now to report it.
Right.
You know, who knows who those people are? It's scary stuff. I wanted to get your thoughts, because you obviously served in Congress. You were at one point in charge of the Capitol Police, if I remember correctly.
Yes, I was.
Washington Post came out with a new analysis of January 6th. They found over the course of the 78 minutes from the first breach until they breached the Capitol, 17 calls were made for backup and no response. Thoughts?
Right. Well, I think that the system, and obviously I think this report is really important that the Post has put out, because again, 17 requests for backup, and it was in 78 minutes, and they have really reconstructed exactly, you know, what happened, where it failed, and I think that it failed in several points, definitely at the top of the food chain. I keep reading about in these stories about the police board. Again, I served out there. It went from the speaker's office to me, because I chaired House administration, to the House Sergeant of Arms, the Deputy Sergeant of Arms, over to the Senate and through the system. The police board, which I hear about all the time, and I'm sure the members wouldn't like me saying this, but I think there's six members on there. It's been there for a long time, and it really doesn't have authority. Nobody calls the police board for anything. So I think that the system failed at the level of the sergeant of arms of the House and the Senate and the, you know, chief of police. And I think that the system failed tremendously.
Yeah.
And when I read this about the amount of calls for backup in 78 minutes that weren't answered, that is a system that's in heart failure. And they need to obviously improve the system. And I would say this, it's not just a matter of hiring more officers. We have a great force out there. I do hate seeing the Capitol Hill police disparaged as they are. We have a lot of great policemen and women out there. But the system, it's not, again, Rick, about adding people. It's about making that system react. We had a slow reaction, basically, when 911 occurred. We, Steny Hoyer, myself, the minority leader, Pelosi at the time, and Hastert, the speaker, all the offices worked together to make that system function. They need to do that type of thing again.
Yeah. Finally, I want to get your thoughts on, I think we talked about this the other day, but President Biden's pulling out all of the troops from Afghanistan before September 11th, I guess, is the goal. And look, I think he's citing, you know, this is what the last administration agreed to. We need to do it. But he came out and said, look, there's not going to be a fifth president who's going to have to inherit this mess. We're getting out now. I'm curious your thought.
I think it's a good thing to do. I think he's going to stop the forever war, our longest war. We have a twofold mission that we started over there. I was in Afghanistan twice with delegations. One was military, the other was civil. And I stress that because this was a country that had, at that time, 20,000 telephones. I mean, it was very, very behind. So we had a dual path. We also, you know, had the civil path to help the government actually, you know, try to modernize. We can continue to advise on that end of it, not with troops, but with, you know, actually kind of the business advice, how to run the systems, improve the systems to make the government stronger. But as far as having troops there, I think they need to come back. And, you know, President Trump was starting that, and President Biden will finish it. And he would not take 4 years to finish it. I think it's the right thing to do.
No, we got to get out of there. There's no question about it. Are you surprised, though, that he didn't declare victory? Because somewhere, you know, we've done that in the past. You know, we declared victory and get out. Are you surprised that he didn't? He just said it's time to get out?
No, I mean, look, there's controversy, you know, some controversy on the Hill about, you know, getting out and, you know, did we win or not? Look, we, you know, we didn't win. We went over and we routed out the Taliban and eventually got bin Laden. That's a success.
Yeah. I don't know what winning is, Bob. Nobody defined to me what winning is.
And exactly, Rick. And President Biden, when he was Senator Biden, the one thing he is well known for on Capitol Hill is his knowledge of foreign affairs, how the world works, and our interactions with it. And there's no way that, as president, with all the knowledge he has over his 30 years in the Congress, there's no way he's going to say, okay, well, we won that one, didn't we? He's going to leave. He'll admit, you know, to what's happened over several decades before he was president. And if he's asked, he's not going to sugarcoat it to say, oh, hey, no, this was we won it. Yeah. No, that's why we're leaving. He's not going to do that.
Right. No,
he's been around too long.
I don't know what my problem is. I don't know what winning looks like in that equation. So
it doesn't. You know, and again, we went in and we, you know, routed out the Taliban, helped to establish a new government, and then it just went on and on and on. At some point in time, the government has to stand. It's the same in Iraq, and basically, Iraq, you know, has made it very clear they don't want us there.
Yep.
And when you see that, it's, you know, definitely time to go.
Gather the sheep and get the flock out.
Get them out.
I'm right there with you. Bob, I appreciate the time, as always, my good friend.
Thank you, Rick.
Our good friend Bob Nay. Let's take a quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.